here this evening. The song we have just heard, rather relative to the singing of the sweet voices of Zion, both old and young, fits in very well with the thoughts which I had a desire to present tonight. I'd like to read from the 12th chapter of Ecclesiastes. It says, "Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain. In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they're few, and those who look out of the window be darkened, and the doors shall be shut in the streets when the sound of the grinder is low, and he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. Also, when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way, the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. Or even the silver cord be loosened, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. Then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, all is vanity. And moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yea, he gave them good heed, and sought out and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find out acceptable words, and that which was written was upright, even words of truth. The words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. And further by these, my son, be admonished of making many books, there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil."
I am happy to be able to introduce Brother Wheaton as our speaker this evening. I would that each one of you might give him your special attention as he would speak to us, and that you might especially remember him in your prayers.
As I come before you this evening, I realize my human limitations, both spiritually, I mean physically, as well as otherwise, because I realize that as time passes, as we grow older, our abilities decrease. Tonight I wanted to talk somewhat to the young people of this congregation. I'm quite willing that you older young people will sit in and listen to what I may have to say, and that if there are any of you that are older than I am, that you'll just indulge with me during the brief time that I hope to be able to occupy. In this day and age in which we live, we find that because of science and technology, that the world and its affairs has advanced so rapidly that it is difficult conditions as it would seem to be necessary. In order that we might be able to more fully appreciate the great task that lies before us, we must have grounded in our hearts and our minds a firm understanding and appreciation of the great first cause of all causes, which was God the Eternal Father. I'd like to read another passage from the 19th Psalm, which I think will have a bearing upon some of the things that I wish to present to you. In the first place, I would like to make a reference here to one of the objections that I had recently an opportunity to review with a man who has made a very sincere and unwarranted attack upon the Book of Mormon, whom I visited in his home and was able to persuade him to a friendly discussion of our differences and to make a recording of it. And this took up the full morning from 9 o'clock until almost 1 in the afternoon before we finally reached the point where we had to go our separate ways, and still we would have both liked to have discussed other of these points. But one of the chief objections, or one of the objections, that this man made to the Book of Mormon was the fact that Joseph Smith, in his younger days, in the days of his youth, had been subject to many of the things of youth, and as a consequence of that, he disqualified himself in their minds for the great work of the Book of Mormon. I countered that by referring him to the Psalms, the most beautiful passages that we have in the Holy Scriptures, that I enjoy and receive inspiration always when I read them. And I told him, I said, you know, you're taking the Bible. We find there the writings of a man who in his young days, youthful days, and after he had risen to be a king over Israel, that he was a very human being in many respects. We first have an accounting of David when he was with his people as a little shepherd boy in the hills of Israel, when the great Philistine Goliath challenged Israel to produce a man who was equal to him, that they might go forth in the plains between the two great armies and fight each other, and the one that would prevail that side of the quarrel would be considered as the victor. In this way, it is thought that many lives might be spared. Well, if we're acquainted with the story, you remember that years ago, some of you remember that I preached a sermon on the subject of what hast thou in thy hand? I'm not going to go over that sermon at this time, but I want to refer to one thought that was there. But the question would be asked of David, what hast thou in thy hand? And the only answer that he could give, I have a sling and 5 small pebbles that I have gained from the brook. That's what I have in my hand. And when he confronted this Goliath, he was laughed at, he was mocked, he was held up to scorn, and finally, this Goliath, when you can imagine that David was just a small stripling boy, a shepherd boy, and Goliath was a man of nearly 10 feet tall, and a bulk of body in comparison with that height. And this little stripling boy challenging him to a battle out there before all Israel. It seemed like a mockery. And yet this little boy, when he was challenged, he said that he would stand there in the faith of the God of Israel and give battle to this great giant. And so he did. The result was that because of his accuracy with the sling and the small pebbles and the chasing away of the marauding wolves and prey, beasts of prey upon his sheep, that he was able with that little sling and one pebble to strike the giant in the forehead and knock him unconscious and to take his own sword and cut off his head and hold it up and show that he had gained a victory over this man. Here is an example of youthful courage, youthful faith, and consecration to a purpose. When he presented himself to the king had so much compassion upon him that he took off his own helmet and his own armor and placed it upon the little boy and gave him his sword. The only thing he could offer as a protection. All the generals and others had refrained or refused or were fearful of this combat. And the result was that when he did that, that David simply found it necessary to cast those things aside. He knew his strength. His strength was in the Lord, the God of Israel. As David grew to manhood, he allowed himself to follow after many of the human weaknesses. One of them especially, as the scriptures tell us, that is, he was one day in his palace, he looked out the window. He saw the beautiful wife of Uriah, one of his commanders, bathing in the willows. And he desired her, and he lusted after her. And as a result of that, he caused that Uriah should be put in the front of the battle and deserted practically by the rest of the armies of Israel. And there he was slaughtered and put to death. And the result of it was that David did acquire the wife of Uriah. So we find that when David was under the inspiration of the Spirit of God, he was a mighty force of good when he acted in his human capacities and weakness. He was a mighty force for evil. Because in this thing that he did to Uriah, he was not only an adulterer, but he was also a murderer. And he was also treacherous to his people, because his people received the recompense for his deeds. And so I asked this man, who is the author of the attack upon the Book of Mormon, I said, if the conduct of Joseph Smith was so reprehensive that God could not use him in producing the Book of Mormon, I said, how about the beautiful Psalms that David wrote, which has been an inspiration, a source of lifting up of people for thousands of years. Are we going to tear these Psalms out of the Bible and cast them out because of the human weakness of the man that wrote them? Well, he said, I never thought of that. I said, you should have thought of it when you wrote your book, because you have led people to believe a half-truth in the things which you brought forth. Well, I don't care to go further than that at this time, but I want to read from one of these Psalms that David wrote. He says, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Can you ever forget, brothers and sisters, the beautiful pictures that our brother presented the other evening, I guess it was last evening, on the constellations of the heavens? Oh, they were beautiful. I could not help but shed a few tears as I considered the heavens as our brother thus portrayed them. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. How did David know way back there, hundreds of centuries and centuries before the coming of Christ and before our day, with the great satellites that we have and the great radio equipment that we have, that there was a symphony of music in the planets and the stars that could be recorded, and that they have drawn from these voices of the stars and the planets and the great outer space of the world, sounds which they are unable as yet to determine their measure or their origin. It says, there is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. And them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoiceth as a strong man to run a race. His going forth is from the end of the heavens, and his circuit unto the end of it, and there is nothing hid from the heat thereof. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. Here we have, in very concise language, a description, as was uttered in the words of David, of the things that bear testimony of the fact that God lives, that he has been from time eternal, and of which no man has the measure nor the understanding. And yet we find that in these very words, graphically, prophetically speaking of this great wisdom and power of God, of creation, of things that we are only today, after thousands of years, are beginning to learn, just the very briefest outline of what is going on in this great universe around about us. We find that in another psalm, another passage from the passage of Isaiah, we find these words in the 40th chapter. It says, to whom then will ye liken God? Have ye not known? Have ye not heard? Hath it not been told you from the beginning? Have ye not understood from the foundation of the world? Yes, these things have been made known to mankind from the foundation of the world. But few throughout these ages have been willing to listen to them sufficiently that they could present them in the manner in which we have them here. Says it is he that sitteth upon the circle of the earth. You know that he sits upon that circle of the earth, and it is so perfect that man down in the heart of Mexico among the Maya people were able to calculate the time to within 2/10,000ths of a day of perfection, showing that as far as human ability in mathematics and of computation, I was able to bring to the time of the circling of the sun and the earth and the changing of the seasons to within 2/10,000ths of a day. Well, I'll let you calculate that. You multiply 24 hours by 60 minutes and 60 minutes by 60 seconds and you can figure that out. You brothers that are more alert probably than I am on figures. It is he that sitteth upon the circle of the earth, and the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers, that stretcheth out the heavens as a curtain and spreadeth them out as a tent to dwell in. I don't know whether you folks, how many of you have ever had an experience similar to the one that I have had in years gone by. One time when Brother James Yates, myself and others were up north here in the area of Centralia, a little later in the year than this, we had a series of meetings. And after the meetings were over on the 4th of July, old Brother S.P. Cox, who was the pastor of our group up in that area, he arranged to take us all out to the seashore for a few days of recreation and outing before we should separate and go to our several places of work that we were to go to. And during that time, I was carried out to sea. I got caught in the undertow. I was carried out to sea, and I was swimming in circles like a drowning rat. And as I'd come up on the high swells of the ocean, I could look back, and the people were so small they looked like ants. And then again I would be buried down in the trough of those great waves, and then they would come over me and I would be buried. Well, don't take very many of such wallops as that to sap the strength of the best of swimmers. And I was not the best. But I was considered as fair in that activity. After I had dived into the sea, the storm came up, and old Aunt Vida Yates, she said, I never saw the sea so angry. It just turned green and looked like it was just hungry for a victim. And sure enough, that's the way it was. Even a lifeboat could not come out to help me. Only the power of God could do so. And he did do it in a very remarkable way when he spoke from the heavens. And he said, turn on your back and float, and I'll bring you safely to shore. As I came up on one of those high swells of the ocean and could look to the shore, it was a long way off. The people were as small as grasshoppers, and as I said, looked more like the size of ants. But through the grace of God, I am here today to recount briefly that experience. And so, he says, the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers. When we consider the millions of people that inhabit our world today and have inhabited since the creation, we realize it must be a great place, great size and vast areas. It says, to whom then will we liken? Will ye liken me? Or shall I be equal, saith the Holy One. Can you find anywhere in all of your studies, your researches, your delving into the hearts of the earth, or projecting yourself out into the outer space of the surrounding universe, can you find anyone, any individual, any being, that is comparable to God? With man, with all of his great wisdom, with his computers, with his knowledge of space, his knowledge that he's gained from a landing craft upon the moon, and upon Mars, and upon others, other planets, of which they have been trying to determine if there was life, they come back with the same answer, that beyond these places, there are still great, vast unknowns, of which there must have been some power that is greater than human power that kept them in motion and kept them orbiting in their places year after year, century after century, millennial after millennial, until eternity has passed in many respects. And still, we are yet unable to find an equal to our God. And so, we are told to lift up, he says, lift up your eyes on high. Reminded me of our brother's little boy this morning that he told about, that went out and lifted his eyes up to the source of creation and prayed for a baby brother or sister. He didn't make any question in his mind of what it would be. And from all that we've learned, I don't think it's going to be too long that his prayers will be answered. But anyway, he said, lift up your eyes on high, and behold, who hath created these things, and bringeth out their hosts by number. He calls them all by names, by the greatness of his might. For he that is strong in power, for that he is strong in power, not one faileth. And so, that challenge has been given to the world. It's given to us from our childhood to the grave. I could not help but be somewhat impressed, and my curiosity was greatly aroused by the article that Sister Wheaton read to me as we drove along the way yesterday out of the Woman's Magazine, showing that a little child had intelligence and reason enough before he was into this world that he could remember, after he came into this world, he could remember the pain, the stress of coming into this world. And as a result of that, they have shown, and I've seen that. I remember when our son Leroy was born, it was one of the hardest tasks that my wife could possibly have, of putting any kind of a garment upon that child that would slip over his head. He would fight and he would scream and he would throw his arms and his legs, and he would show that he was very much disturbed and distressed and angry that he had to go through such that. And that was the memory that he had of that ordeal of being born. But as time passed, we find that time softens most of our aches and our heartaches and our troubles. And so, man is an intelligent being. That intelligence is put in man from the time of conception, and it never leaves him from that time throughout mortality or immortality. There'll never be a time when man will not be able to reason, to think, and to give expression to his thoughts and the things of which he is interested in. Thus, when we envision the greatness of our God and compare it with the puny achievements of man. It should behoove us to pause in our affairs and seek ways to be more like Him, for we are created in His image and His likeness. We heard the testimony of some of the young men this morning who have recently been called to the ministry, of how that they wish that they could have given these testimonies long before this. You know, this age in which we're living, that isn't a new wish. This would be an encouragement to these brothers. I wish that I was 25 years younger, at least that much. I'd just like to give another 25 years to witnessing for Christ up and down the earth and among the children of men. Maybe I will anyway. I don't know. I'm not going to tell God that I'm going to die on a certain day at a certain hour and in a certain place. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to take things as they come. I read a little poem. I liked it so well that I took it home and I put it up on my shelf over my typing desk. And it was this, that today is a tomorrow that you worried about yesterday. And I'm not going to allow my worries today bother what's going to take place tomorrow along that line. I'm just going to live it up. I want to live it up in the Lord. And I want to say to all of you young people that are here tonight, to go home and study with care this chapter that I read from the Ecclesiastes, which is the 12th chapter, I believe. As it says here, remember now, today. Don't wait till tomorrow and have regret for not reading it, but read it today. It says, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, and thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. Don't wait till tomorrow. This is your day. This is your opportunity of expression. This is your time to find God and to find the place where He wants you to labor. I thought last night, as I listened to that beautiful discourse of our brother and the pictures and the narration that followed that, a little prayer went up to my lips. Why can't we have 70 men like that carrying this kind of a message to the world? Wouldn't be long until we would find that our numbers would be increased and we would be able to do some of the things which we would like to do. You know, brothers and sisters, you young boy, young men, a young woman, I'm going to tell you something. It isn't a bed of roses. It isn't a proposition where you give up one position and get a promotion to better pay and things of that type. If you're looking at it from the standpoint of this world and its goods, but it is an opportunity. It is within the realms of a possibility for you to develop yourselves to that point where you'll not only be in the service of your fellow man, but where as a result of this service to your fellow man, you'll guarantee yourself a place in the great immortal land that's beyond this life, where you can share with all the holy prophets and the servants of God who have been martyred and given their lives in the days gone by, that these things might be. We take ancient Abraham, the father of nations. In his time and his day, the Lord spoke to him and told him that he would be a blessing to all the nations of the earth through his seed. That is another question that was raised in our discussion the other day, and pointed out that that Paul in his writings had said that the scriptures foreseeing that God would justify the heathen through faith preached before the gospel unto Abraham, saying, in thee and my seed would all nations of the earth be blessed. And the answer came back, so that's all there was of the gospel that Abraham had, that just as his seed would be instrumental in the serving of God. That was all the gospel they knew, because the mystery of these things had been hidden from the foundation of the world. Well, I pointed out to him that the scriptures also said concerning Christ that this was he that was in the church in the wilderness when Moses went up into the mount. And he said, I didn't know that was there. I don't believe he did. And to my great surprise, I learned that this man had written this as a college thesis when he was 22 years old. And he made this plea. He said, please, don't hold me responsible now after 10 years of meditation on these things, of holding me responsible for something I might have said back there. I said, your book still stands as your voice and as your objection to something that you admit that you didn't know very much about. He admitted he'd only sketched through the Book of Mormon here and there, to places that others had called his attention to. Well, it's pitiful when we do that. And I hope that the youth, the young men and the young women of this group here tonight and throughout the church will realize that if you want to prepare yourselves for service in the Lord, that you must do it the Lord's way. And what was his way? He says, search the scriptures, for they are they that testify of me, and then in them ye think ye have eternal life. Prove all things, and hold fast that which is good. And the only way that you can do that is to take these sacred words that God has given us in these two books here and search them for yourselves and find the truth. Well, you say, what about the preacher? Yes, we have to have preachers, but they're like teachers in school. If you let your life be governed and controlled by just the things that you've learned in school, it's going to be a barren life. The teacher only gives you the foundation upon which you can build the life that you want to have. And you have to do that yourself. Nobody can do it for you. And that is true with regard to the preachers. And I happen to be one of them. And so we find that these are the things that we must remember, that there is a God in heaven. If you will search the universe over, I've covered a little bit of this one planet. A little bit. Very little. But you know, it has created within my heart and in my mind a desire to know more about it than I know. I have a desire in my heart that God would help me with inspiration and the capability of expressing myself in words, let me live in the hearts of people all the things which I myself have experienced. I hope that in the days ahead that I will be able to have the cooperation of many of you people, old and young. A little girl, I don't know whether she's here in the audience tonight, but I guess she is. She said something about age, and I said, how old are you before you're too old to be young? And brothers and sisters, I'm still young in heart. after the things that will bring truth to the children of men. And so, let us resolve tonight that we are going to make our preparation for the things that God would have us to do. And you say, well, what position am I going to prepare for? Am I going to prepare to be a teacher or a priest or an elder or an apostle? Or what shall I prepare for? Well, I had a little poem somewhere in my books here. I don't know whether I can locate it right off of the spur of the moment. But it tells us here, yes, here it is, to be the best of whatever you can, you are. If you can't be a pine on the top of the hill, be a scrub in the valley, but be the best little scrub out by the side of the rill. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a bush, be a bit of grass, some highway happier mate. If you can't be a muskie, then be a bass, but the loveliest bass in the lake. We can't all be captains. Some have to be crewed. There's something for all of us there. There's work to be done, and we've all got to do our part in the way that's sincere. If you can't be a highway, then just be a track. If you can't be the sun, be a star. It isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are. And so too, let's prepare for the very best that you're capable of doing. God will find that out. God knows, and He will know. And at the appropriate time, He will make it known to those whom you serve of the capacity in which you might labor. And God can use you. But as I said a while ago, it is not a bed of roses. There's thorns along the road. There's many rough places. Years ago, as a young man, before my beloved Uncle Riley called and died, the night before, I had worked at the printing office as an apprentice printer under him in this printing shop in Kansas City. And I had to work till in the small hours of the night. And I was supposed to go to his house the next day to get my paycheck. And that night I had a dream. And in this dream, I was walking side by side with him along a rugged road. And we would walk a little ways, and then we would sit down in the shadow of a tree, and he would begin to tell me, teach me the duties and responsibilities of the ministry. And then we would go a little further, and the further we went, the steeper the grade became. And finally I observed that we had walked so far that the soles of our shoes entirely worn, and our bare feet was being cut by the rocks along the way until they were bleeding and sore. And we continued this way for some time. And finally, after winding our way back and forth up through the trails of this rugged area that we were journeying through, we came to a beautiful highway. And as far as your eye could see, we could see this beautiful straight highway down ahead of us until it verged just into the point like a needle, and there was no more of it. And when we came to that point, we observed, as we traveled along it just a little ways together, there was a little road that went off to one side, and he stopped. And he turned to me very seriously. And he said, Clarence, I'm going to leave you here, and you go on with the work and do the things that I have told you. And with that, he turned and he went down this road. divisions, but they might walk together and accomplish the things that God would have them do. So let us prepare ourselves now and not wait till the emergency rises, when the Lord shall say, as he said to Peter, go down into Macedonia, go down to Corinthians, go down to Caesarea, go down to these people that are wanting you there to serve them. And so, as we think of these things, I want to consider what our goal in life is. I have a poem here, I think it was by Edgar Guest. He says, no, it wasn't. It was by Wilcox. What is her first name? Ella Wheeler Wilcox. He said, ships sail east and ships sail west, while the self-same breezes blow. It is the set of the sails and not the gales that determine the way they go. Like the winds of the sea or the winds of fate, as we journey along through life, it is the set of the soul. Now remember that. It's the set of the soul that determines the goal, and not the calm nor the strife. Now what is going to be your goal? What are you going to set your heart on? For what purpose have you accepted the responsibilities of the ministry after the order of the Son of God? Is it because it gives you an added prestige that you can go out and say to your fellow man, well, I'm an elder in the Church of Christ. I'm an elevated person. I'm above the rest of the people. Listen to me. Look upon me. Is that what you're going to do? Are you going out and when you lay your hands upon people to bless our need or in ministry to their needs, that you're going to pass them down until not even their heads are above the ground in a form of precept? Or are you going to get your hands down under the poor, most needy individual in this world and lift him up so high and lifting him up, being lifted up that he can stand and see God as you are expected to see him and to know him? These are the things that we got to consider. And so, I leave these thoughts there at that point. Now here are some questions. Is it your purpose to be a drifter on the sea of life? Are you going to just drift along the crowd and say, well, yes, I was ordained an elder, but I'm not much of a speaker, and I this and I that, and I've got a field to crawl, or I've got a job down here somewhere that's paying pretty good money, and I would like to just keep at it until I get my Social Security, and then I'm going to go. You know, I found a lot of men that have waited that long. Then they got their Social Security, then they're going to give the time to the Lord. And what do? The first thing they do, they buy a camper. The next thing, they fill it up full of all kinds of camping outfits. They take off for the lake, the fishing resort, the seashore, or someplace, and they forget all about their ministry. And that's the end of it. Oh, they're getting the Social Security. That's a fine thing. Well, I spent 60 years in the mission field, and because of that, my Social Security was almost to the minimum. But I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to tell you this, young men and young women, that the preacher one time made this observation. That is the one that wrote the Ecclesiastes. He says, I was young and now I'm old. But I've never seen the righteous forsaken or the seed baking bread. That's true. If you think that this little position that you might hold is going to guarantee you the hope of salvation and eternity, you're going to wake up someday and you're going to say to yourself, I wish that I have given my youth to the Lord in the service that I could have rendered. And you'll have that regret to live with throughout your days. It's your purpose to be a drifter on the sea of life. It's your purpose to be calmed in the doldrums without purpose or will to make your life worthwhile. What is your purpose in life? Don't be a drifter. godless life as it is desolate and lonely. It is desolate and lonely. I don't know where today I would be able to turn if I could not turn to my God. If I could not, even when my car was stalled upon the highway a few days ago,